This is September 16th, 2023. The time is 22:06 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I am Ward Green, and our study for today, little ones, begins in the article called The Ark of Urartu, Chapter 1, Paragraph 9. Can you imagine a wooden ship as large as an acre in size? Why? The largest wooden ship built in modern times. Now that may change, it may have already changed, but at the time of this article, the largest wooden ship built in modern times was the Wyoming. A schooner measuring 329.5 feet in length, 50 feet wide, and 30.4 feet deep, meaning top to bottom, and was launched December 15th, 1909 at the shipyard of Percy and Small, Bath, Maine, USA. While we're underway already, I think I'll do what I can to reduce the background noise. This ship foundered, the Wyoming, in heavy seas in March of 1924, buckling, with seams leaking and then sinking with the loss of all crew. Now, the fact remains that the Ark was bigger than the one that sank in 1924 and demonstrates a superior technology. Superior technology. If one doubts that Noah's Ark is of superior technology to the Wyoming, one might do well to consider that the cargo capacity of the Ark is almost exactly four times the capacity of the Wyoming. And the Ark foundered in a mud flow and now lies at an elevation of about 6,300 feet. Seriously, though, there's nothing worthy of speculation. Remember that there is an old saying about it: if ifs and ands were pots and pans, there'd be no trade for tinkers. The dimensions of the Ark of Noah from the Bible, Genesis 6 and 15, are 300 by 50 by 30 cubits, similar to the Wyoming, except that the Ark is larger. Cubits are more than feet. The length of the Ark, as measured by David Fassold, was 6,180 inches. 6,180, with the inch being a standard measure used in the Great Pyramid, the number 6,180 becomes significant for the reason that it is a quote-unquote phi number, P-H-I, phi, as are 1.618 and 2.618. And we've already shown with an approximate calculation that 1.618 squared, or phi squared, actually, the more precise calculation, phi squared equals phi plus 1. In other words, 1.68 squared equals 1.68 plus 1, or 1.618 squared equals 2.618, which is just 1.618 plus 1. But we also saw that 1.618 was equal to 1 over, or 1 divided by, 0.618. So this number phi has a remarkable set of properties, doesn't it? When the width of the Ark given in the Bible is taken as a quotient of the beam maximum, so we divide the beam maximum by 1.618, the maximum width of 138.88 feet is now calculated as follows. In other words, the number of cubits given in the Bible, which is 50, if that's taken to be the actual maximum beam width of the ship, which we know as the Ark, which is not a box in shape, and we divide that maximum beam width by 1.618, and we arrive at 50 when we do that, in terms of cubits, that is, then So from feet to cubits, we do a conversion as well. We end up with this calculation that we can do in the other direction to show that 138.88 is in fact the maximum beam width. And the parameters, we've already talked about that a little bit, but this is for the younger ones a little bit perhaps beyond their capabilities at the moment, but they will eventually understand this if they persist in it. The length of the Egyptian cubit now, 20.6 inches, as we see there, was determined to be just that, based on the length of the arc as 6,180 inches for the length of the arc, and knowing that the Bible gave the ark's length as 300 cubits. So when we divide those two together, we get 6,180 divided by, well, that's inches, right? Divide that into 300 divisions, or 300 units, each of which is 20.6 inches, and that's the calculation that shows the length of the Egyptian cubit as 20.6 inches. So 6,180 divided by 300 equals 20.6. Moses wrote Genesis and was raised in Egypt. So that cubit to which the Bible refers at Genesis 6:15 may logically be the Egyptian cubit, a distance thought today to be between 52.3 and 52.4 centimeters, which is exactly in the right range, because we calculated that as 52.324 centimeters in between those two values, which is exactly 20.6 inches. We're very close to it when we take the measured length of the arc, okay, as both 300 cubits and 6,180 inches, which we've already just done. So, Vassil measured the arc as 6,180. Genesis 6:15 gives Noah's arc as 300 cubits. Those two values together give us 20.6 for the cubit length. Scans at the site. They did scans with very advanced scientific equipment, like radar and so on. You know, the radar used for underground scanning. And these scans showed that the ark had a moon pool, and that massive quantities of iron are present where it would have been needed at the aft corners for anchor deployment. I know, it seems hilarious. The Ark really had a moon pool. It's incredible. That's the end of our study for today. The whole story of the Ark and what they scanned and found out about the actual remnant of the Ark in Turkey is just mind-boggling to me. It's also extremely humorous when you think about some of these things. They're just beyond, you know, the average person's imagination. There are no average people, by the way. Proverbs chapter 9 is our proverb for today, little ones. And it says in verse 4, whoever is inexperienced, let him turn aside here. Whoever is in want of heart, she had said to him. So this is the lady attendants of true wisdom calling out on the heights of the town to bring in the inexperienced ones so she can teach them. Proverbs 9 and 4. And Joshua chapter 4. So, the Israelites have just crossed the Jordan, and it came about that as soon as the whole nation had completed passing over the Jordan, Jehovah proceeded to say to Joshua, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from each tribe, and command them, saying, take up for yourselves from the very middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood motionless, 12 stones, and you must carry them over with you and deposit them in the lodging place in which you will lodge tonight. So Joshua called 12 men whom he had appointed from the sons of Israel, one man from each tribe, and Joshua went on to say to them, Pass ahead of the ark of Jehovah your God, to the middle of the Jordan, and lift up for yourselves each one a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel, in order that this may serve as a sign in your midst, in case your sons should ask in time to come, saying, Why do you have these stones? You must also say to them, Because the waters of the Jordan were cut off from before the ark of Jehovah's covenant. When it passed through the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones must serve as a memorial to the sons of Israel to time indefinite. Accordingly, the sons of Israel did just so. They did so, just as Joshua had commanded, and they took up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, just as Jehovah had stated to Joshua, to correspond with the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. And they went taking them over with them to the lodging place and depositing them there. There were also 12 stones that Joshua set up in the middle of the Jordan on the standing place of the feet of the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant. And they continue there until this day. And the priests carrying the Ark were standing in the middle of the Jordan until the whole matter had been completed that Jehovah had commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. All the while, the people hurried up and passed over. And it came about that as soon as all the people had completed passing over, then the ark of Jehovah passed over, and the priests before the people. And the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh proceeded to pass over in battle formation in the sight of the sons of Israel, just as Moses had stated to them. About 40,000 equipped for the army passed over before Jehovah for the war onto the desert plains of Jericho. On that day, Jehovah made Joshua great in the eyes of all Israel, and they began to fear him just as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. Then Jehovah said to Joshua, Command the priests carrying the Ark of the Testimony that they go up out of the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priests, saying, Go up out of the Jordan. And it came about that when the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah came up out of the middle of the Jordan, and the soles of the feet of the priests were drawn out onto the dry ground, then the waters of the Jordan began returning to their place and went overflowing all its banks as formerly. And the people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th of the first month, and took up camping at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. See, that's why we believe that Moses died on Adar 7, because Adar 7 is three days before the 10th of Adar, and they mourned for Moses for 30 days before they had 3 days of gathering before crossing. So that's where we get 33 days after Moses' death, as the 10th of Nisan, the first month. Therefore, Adar 7 is very close to the death of Moses. Where did we see that they mourned Moses for 30 days? I'm trying to find it. Here, is it here? Yeah, let's see. I think so. I think it's in the last... I hate to not have done this already. I just know this number because I've done it, but I have to double check all the time. 30 days they wept for Moses in Deuteronomy 34 and 8. You see that? And that was the mourning period in verse 8 for Moses. Okay. So, let's go back to Joshua chapter 4, where we are now. So this is a piece of chronological information, this date given as the 10th of Nisan here. And at that point they took up camping in verse 19 at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho on the 10th of Nisan. In verse 20 now, as for the 12 stones that they had taken out of the Jordan, Joshua set these up at Gilgal. And he went on to say to the sons of Israel, when your sons ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean? You must then let your sons know, saying, on the dry land it was that Israel passed over this Jordan, when Jehovah your God dried up the waters of the Jordan from before them until they had passed over, just as Jehovah your God had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up from before us until we had passed over, in order that all the peoples of the earth may know that Jehovah's hand, that it is strong, in order that you may indeed fear Jehovah your God always. And that's the end of Joshua 4. And now we're going to look at something new. Titus chapter 1. We finished Revelation. Titus chapter 1. This is Paul writing to Titus, who is one of his Christian companions in the ministry at the time that Paul writes this. Paul writes to Titus, Paul, a slave of God and an apostle of Jesus Christ, according to the faith of God's chosen ones and the accurate knowledge of the truth, which accords with godly devotion, upon the basis of a hope of the everlasting life which God, who cannot lie, promised before times long lasting. Whereas, in his own due times, he made his word manifest in the preaching with which I was entrusted, under command of our Savior God, to Titus, a genuine child according to a faith shared in common. It's a long introduction to a letter, but there it is. And Paul continues, may there be undeserved kindness and peace from God the Father and Christ Jesus our Savior. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you might correct the things that were defective and might make appointments of older men in city after city, as I gave you orders, if there is any man free from accusation, a husband of one wife having believing children that were not under a charge of debauchery, nor unruly. For an overseer must be free from accusation as God's steward, not self-willed, not prone to wrath, not a drunken brawler, not a smiter, not greedy of dishonest gain. That expression there, we could imagine that that may have something to do with the love of money, perhaps, that greedy for dishonest gain. But hospitable, a lover of goodness, sound in mind, righteous, loyal, self-controlled, holding firmly to the faithful word as respects his art of teaching, that he may be able both to exhort by the teaching that is healthful and to reprove those who contradict. For there are many unruly men, profitless talkers. And deceivers of the mind, especially those men who adhere to the circumcision. It is necessary to shut the mouths of these, as these very men keep on subverting entire households by teaching things they ought not for the sake of dishonest gain. A certain one of them, their own prophet, said, quote, Cretans are always liars, injurious wild beasts, unemployed gluttons, end quote. Unemployed gluttons, end quote. This witness is true. For this very cause, keep on reproving them with severity, that they may be healthy in the faith, paying no attention to Jewish fables and commandments of men who turn themselves away from the truth. All things are clean to clean persons, but to persons defiled and faithless, nothing is clean, but both their minds and their consciences are defiled. They publicly declare they know God, but they disown him by their works, because they are detestable and disobedient and not approved for good work of any sort. That's the end of Titus chapter 1, little ones. Oh, it's good to get that done, because I was out working today. I got a new mini, what's called a mini chainsaw, which it's the first tool that I can think of right now, anyway, that I've ever bought that is battery powered. All my devices were plug-in, not battery powered. I never could bring myself to buy a battery powered device, but then I realized that I needed this tool. When I'm grinding up my branches, I bought a wood chipper too. I bought a wood chipper, which is very, well, it seems like a lot of money maybe, but it was a very inexpensive device compared to, or machine compared to the gas-powered multi-$1,000 or at least $1,000 wood chippers, which need more maintenance because they're gas-powered. So I bought a machine that was something like, what was it? Maybe it was only $350, I forget. By the way, I was wrong about the humidifier that I bought. It wasn't $150, that was combined price with that and another thing I bought. It was only $70, but I could have got it for more like $40 or something, I guess, if I bought the newer model. So it wasn't as bad as it sounded, but anyway, I love it. It's a beautiful machine, by the way, the humidifier. It's phenomenal the way it works, so simple. And I had one before that was, it kept leaking. It was you fill it by turning the tank upside down and then filling it and then turning it back. Whereas the new one, you fill it from the top, you never have to deal with these issues. Hopefully it won't leak, but this is just a much better machine. But let's get to the chipper, back to the chipper. The chipper is this electric chipper that's 15 amps, and it had great ratings from even somebody that we know as Bob Vila, who's an American teacher, author of, or a presenter of shows on home renovations and things like that. He's a very a builder. He's a builder, a very accomplished and knowledgeable builder. And he recommended the chipper that I bought as his number one choice for homeowners. And it's up against all these other, you know, all these other potentially more expensive models, but it was so good because, well, I've been using it now for a couple of days. But what I needed was, I couldn't justify having a chainsaw as well as this device to chop the branches up before I stick them into my into this chipper. The chipper has a certain sized opening that can only fit about a 1.5-inch branch, so you have to cut the branches up and only use the branches that are 1.5 inches in diameter and grind them up by sticking the large end in first and then, you know, pushing them down into the feeder, into the mouth of the chipper until they start to feed themselves. It's a very safe device. It seems like it has a safety shut off and, you know, a lot of different features that seem like it's very hard to get in too much trouble with it, whereas some people have been drawn right in, pulled, their bodies have been pulled right into these much bigger gas-powered chippers, and they've lost their lives by being, you know, virtually just, you know, mutilated in these giant chipping machines. So mine is much smaller, but today I was able to get some work done. But this Saker device that I bought, this mini chainsaw, Saker device, it's just a handheld mini chainsaw that runs on a battery. You lubricate it in the same way, you know, well, with a different oil, but you can use mineral oil or something. You can use any kind of oil, I think. You lubricate it. If you don't want to, they use vegetable oil if you don't want to damage your trees. If you're cutting and you have some kind of very, you know, fancy garden or something. But if you're just cutting dead branches, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of oil you use. But it's a battery-powered device. It comes with two batteries if you buy the kit that has the extra battery. And it's, I think that was, well, I don't remember what that cost either. Oh, I think it was fairly inexpensive, actually. That's why I bought it. It was, but with tax and everything, I don't remember, but I think it was $169, I think it was. Yeah, with tax and everything, $169. And shipping, everything. And I had it delivered fast, so I paid for extra shipping. So $169 for this mini chainsaw that enables me to quickly trim the branches I'm going to use, or I'm going to feed through the chipper. I'm going to chip them. I'm going to, you know, grind them up. And I keep it in one hand, and the other hand I use to pick up the branches and cut the branches off that I wish to. And I always have the chainsaw, the little mini chainsaw, in my one hand. But it's the best tool ever, because I couldn't work that fast if I was using a regular chainsaw. And I've got all kinds of fuel issues with chainsaws. They're always clogging up. You know, they're just... the carburation gets clogged up in them. So you have to do something about that. But the other thing is, they're so heavy. You can't hold them in one hand. I mean, this, and you know, there's no way, or you can, but it's just they're way too big for this job. This is the perfect tool. A little mini chainsaw, perfect tool for this job. And today I was very, very surprised that I could clear enough of these branches, of which I had a huge, huge pile in my driveway. And it's also the result of my work also is that I produce mulch, and I can put that on the driveway, so it keeps the weeds down. But I ground up these branches, and now I can get my winter car out again and convert to that without having it blocked by all these branches. So I was able to accomplish a great deal yesterday and today by doing that. And I'm still far from full strength, but I haven't been full strength for so long. I guess the last time I was at full strength was before I had the certain work done. Let's not be too specific, because it's too sensitive. But, I mean, it's hard to say whether I will eventually just recover. But, oh, the other good news. Oh, my goodness, such good news. My new distilling machine produces this water. I'm drinking it today. It is exquisitely beautiful. It's so pure. I then found out yesterday there's another machine for $29. You can get two extra filters for another $29. So $58 is about $60. You can buy a filter that just purifies water by filtering. Doesn't need to boil it. But then, of course, you will have to boil it if you want to kill the bacteria. So I'd have to go through a second distilling step. But this will save my distilling machine, because I won't have to clean it as often. Because this filter device, which is so inexpensive, although the filters wear out after so many, weeks or whatever. I mean, they become clogged after so many weeks. You have to buy new ones, so $29 every time one of the filters needs to be replaced. But using this, I believe, in conjunction with my wonderful new Mega Home distiller machine, distilling machine. It's the quality of that machine and the glass storage container that came with it is magnificent. And the glass bottle, or whatever you want to call it, carafe, was stored inside it. You couldn't even see it. So when I got it, I couldn't determine where was the glass bottle, the storage container. I couldn't find it. I was puzzled. Where was it? Then I finally actually realized it before somebody else told me. I think I started to think, yeah, it's probably inside. Must be. So it just fits inside with very slight clearance. The whole design of this unit, the Mega Home distilling machine, is phenomenal. I have no affiliations with any of these companies. None of them. I'm not advertising them at all. And if you can find a better machine, by all means, go for that. But the thing is, I can use this distilling machine without using the water purifying filter that I also just bought that hasn't arrived yet. But every time I distill a gallon or 4 liters with this machine, I have to clean it with citric acid to scrub out these deposits on the bottom of it from the calcium in my water and things that are very, very, the solids. The dissolved solids in the water end up being corrosive on the bottom of the tank. So they have to be washed out every time you use it. But if I use this filter system, I'm just thinking I might be able to develop a better system in conjunction with the filter which is a passive filter. You just pour water in and it drips down. It takes a little while to drip out, and then you get water that has zero calcium, zero total dissolved solids, so no heavy metals. It's completely clean of any solids using the filter system, but it still has potentially bacteria. And so you still really either need to boil it, or I could just boil it though too. I wouldn't even have to run it through the distiller. So it's phenomenal. And that's going to be good for the hardware in terms of the big cooking pot that I use to boil it. It's not going to get destroyed by the corrosive action of these dissolved solids either. So all of this is what I've learned, and the result that I've been enjoying so far from the distilling machine is this beautiful, beautiful pure water. And it can be achieved without any filter, just putting the well water into it, running it for about 4 or 5 hours to get 4 liters of this pure water, then letting it cool down before you open it up so you don't burn yourself, and it doesn't, you know, explode or anything with the pressure if you were to open it up too soon. But that's all there is to it. You get this wonderful pure water once it's cooled down, and the water that is dripping out of the machine is not hot anyway, of course. It's just lukewarm. You can stick it in your fridge and it'll be cold in no time. It's just that the machine inside the tank is hot, and you don't want to run the machine down to the very bottom of the tank. You want to leave a good amount of water in the bottom of the tank so that you don't have all the solids accumulated on the bottom that are so difficult to clean. It's easier to clean if you don't run it completely empty. So all of these things I've learned in a matter of a few days. I'm now enjoying crystal clear, delicious pure water, so I don't have to worry about getting calcium from it, and I can wait until I'm ready to eat calcium or ingest it again while I'm recovering from my vitamin D toxicity, which is very harmful, because when you take calcium and you're toxic in vitamin D, you become toxic in calcium also in the blood. So I was in a dire situation, and that's why I was so tired. And it was not just the vitamin D, but the cause also of the calcium together with the vitamin D causing all these things. So that's the end of our study for this day, September 16th, 2023, and our video. And the time is 22:38 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. Have a wonderful night. And on my behalf, this is my special watch, Crow, and my digital watch, Cassie, saying bye for now.